today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
I kept asking, people kept saying yes, which was kind of amazing to me. So then, you know, my aspirations grew, and we added a lifestyle column. We had a celebrity encounters section.
Patrick, we're going to visit with an old friend here today on Rockin' the Suburbs. I am Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And I don't mean old in age. I just mean old in that we've known him for some time, pre-pandemic. Anybody I've known pre-pandemic is an old friend to me.
And that's right.
And that the pandemic thing becomes part of this story that we're going to discuss. So, introducing our friend, Hunter Bennett. Hello, Hunter.
Hey, Jim. Hey, Patrick. It's nice to see you guys again.
You too.
How you been?
I've been all right. We dropped off my youngest child at college last week.
Wow.
So I'm going through sort of an existential crisis at the moment that was, you know, exacerbated by you calling me old during the introduction to this thing. You know, you scrambled to cover it up, but hey.
You're younger than we are, so you're not old. We're old.
Yeah, although I do feel like we're redefining what it means to be in our mid to late 50s.
Yeah, there you go.
Amen.
So Hunter is in the band Dot Dash here in Washington, D.C., and has been in other bands in the past and plays the bass and has many basses, many bass guitars, and is just an overall
14
bass guitars. Does your wife know that?
I'm afraid I confessed to having 14 when I was doing the Politics and Prose reading a couple months ago. So I think she does know now.
I remember one time you told us a story. This is how I deal with records, by the way, is I'll get records and I'll just kind of quickly just, you know, file them into the collection, and no one in the household is the wiser that I have more records until one day, you know, she'll come downstairs and say, like, is this record collection grown since I've last been down here? But anyway, I remember once you saying that you could do that with bass guitars, just kind of shuffle them in, add another one, and who knows, right?
Yeah, I've set up a laundering operation at my office. So like I'll get them shipped to my office and then I'll leave them in the car for a bit. And then like I'll go to rehearsal and then come back from rehearsal, and like, though I left with one bass guitar, I will be returning with two bass guitars, and nobody pays close enough attention to what I'm doing to really figure out what's going on. And Jim, you've also got to experiment with moving your records into like different locations throughout the house, because then it'll become a lot more difficult to keep track of how big it is.
Yeah. When the collection hits Patrick's size, then nobody can tell, right? There's no way to measure it anymore, right?
That's right, yeah. I can't move them around because we originally had my record collection on the second floor of this house that was built in 1946, and the floor started to buckle, so we had to move it down to the basement on the concrete. So,
are you at maximum capacity now on the records?
I'm getting very close, yeah, very, very close.
Yeah.
You have to annex the laundry room if it keeps going like this.
All right, one more bass question, though. How do you decide which of the 14 basses to play?
That's kind of the cool thing about owning that many basses, is it's like, I'll be like, you know what? I should play this one. And I'll play that one for like a couple weeks. But it's like getting a new bass, you know, because it's like I haven't played it in years. So I did that recently with... I have a four-string Hamer Cruise bass from like the early 80s, and the jack got kind of messed up, and so like it started cutting out, so I didn't play the bass for a long time. And then I was like, you know what? I should just get that repaired, and then I can play it again. So I did that, and I played like the last couple of Dot Dash gigs with it, which has been really fun.
Nice, nice. Okay. All right. So let's move on here to your writing. So Hunter has written a couple of books in the past, punk related, and his newest one and his most expansive book is called More Punk Than the Public Library. And it just came out earlier this year. And explain to the listeners what that title means.
Like explain to them what's in the book or how we came up with the book More Punk Than the or title More Punk Than
wherever
the
you want to start with this.
Okay. So I'll start with the title. Well, actually, I should probably explain the book because otherwise it'll seem like an ad hominem attack on the library. So during the pandemic, I started a little library outside my house in Chevy Chase, D.C. It was called the Nevada Avenue Outdoor Free Bookshop, or NAOFB.
And these are those little kiosk things that people have in neighborhoods where you can take a book, leave a book.
Yeah, exactly. Mine had a theme. We gave away books about punk rock and noir or sort of crime novels. And so I started doing that. And when I had the grand opening, I put together a little 2-page newsletter that was page one was a FAQ or frequently asked questions. Explaining how to use a little library, which is kind of probably unnecessary, but explains my personality a little bit. and the second page was little capsule descriptions of the books that were in the little library. And then I had so much fun doing those two pages that I recruited contributors and expanded the next issue. So that was like 5 pages, and it included the capsule descriptions plus a state of the store address, talking about what was going on in the shop. There was an essay about a book that my sister, who wrote the essay, loved. And I interviewed, Mike Hampton, who is a, famous DC punk rock guitarist. He played in Embrace, The Faith, Manifesto, and probably my favorite DC band, The Snakes. So I interviewed him, and then with each successive issue, it would get thicker, and I would recruit more contributors and add more columns. So in total, the library lasted for about a year, and so there were 12 issues, and this book, More Punk Than the Public Library, is a greatest hits of what was in those issues. And I also, my publisher said, why don't you go back and write about what was going on in your life at the time? So I added some new material that way. I wrote an introduction. My friend Jim Spellman from Velocity Girl wrote a foreword. Jim was a customer of the Nevada Avenue Outdoor Free Bookshop and dropped off a ton of stuff. He obviously he knows a lot about music, but he also knows a ton about crime fiction. Anton Bogomazov, who is the book buyer at Politics and Prose, which is the local Chevy Chase DC bookstore and just a fantastic bookstore. Anton also wrote a foreword, and so that's what the book is. And as to why it is called More Punk Than the Public Library, the DC Public Library sells these shirts that say, and now bags, and their slogan is, what's more punk than the public library? And like, the DC Public Library is awesome. They've got rooftop punk rock shows in the summer. They've got a punk rock archive. They've also got a go-go archive. And they have all sorts of fascinating speaker events there. I saw Brian Baker in conversation with Ian MacKay at the library. And so, you know, I would not want to pick a fight with the library, but I couldn't come up with a title for the book. And my publisher, Microcosm Publishing, they came up with More Punk Than the Public Library, because they're like, yeah, it's sort of a punk thing to do. Like, you know, say, I'm more punk than you are. And so I thought it was very funny, but I had some qualms about it, but then I thought about it. I'll read to you from the introduction where I finally landed. So I subsequently wrote back to Microcosm saying, yes, I like the title. And I said, I sent them the following. I've pondered. I love the title. At first, I was worried about picking a fight with the DC library, but fuck them for making people do all that paperwork. That's not punk. I was giving the shit away. No questions asked.
Very nice. Very nice. So my first question here is actually for Patrick, because Patrick used to publish a zine back in the day of like the height of zines, right? And so Patrick, as you were sort of perusing this, did you feel a certain kinship here with Hunter?
Oh, absolutely. And I absolutely related to it, you know, immediately. And one of the things I like the best about this is, you know, well, the as you go through it, you know, sort of the columns that Hunter referenced, the different contributors, fell in love with a book as one, for example, and people are talking about some of the books they love, including 100 Years of Solitude, which is not one I would expect, you know, from this, which is really great. And yeah, just the overall tone and the you know, the beautiful sort of self-referential style of a zine where I think at one point there's a breakdown of like how many people have law degrees and MBAs and everything like that, which is really great too, sort of making fun of or making light of the whole concept. But one thing I really loved, Hunter, was in the introduction, you were talking about, you know, trying, we all struggle to find a way to pass the time and live in the lockdown. You were talking about taking long walks and making snide remarks about other little libraries that were kind of around the neighborhood, which is great. And then you turned it all the way 180 degrees and started one yourself. So I definitely appreciated that punk spirit as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of the things I really love about this is that, like, you're right. It basically was my attempt at a punk zine, but it was staffed almost entirely by non-punks, and not only like non-punks, but people who had never actually read a zine. But during the pandemic, everybody was so bored that they were like, sure, you want me to write something for you? Yeah, I'll do that. And so many of them never even asked like why. or what it was for.
Interesting.
So it started I guess you'd call it a newsletter, right? Is that?
Yeah. Well, I called it a communique.
That's right.
Because I wanted it to seem like I was running a dissident organization.
So it started with you just sort of describing what the store was about, and sort of like, you know, messages from you as the proprietor. But at what point did you, or what made you decide, I guess, to get other people involved in this?
It was after the first issue, and issue one, as I mentioned, was a FAQ and a list of books. And I was like, this is, you know, it's a start, but it's a little sad. And I was like, I could either write the whole thing, in which case, like, it seemed like a lot of work. And also kind of like, I'm not sure that people were that interested in my thoughts on anything. So my sister is a great writer, my sister Bradley. So I was like, well, if I ask her for a book review, she'll definitely write one. And she did. And Mike Hampton, I had interviewed before in an article I wrote about the snakes for Ugly Things. So I was like, and I knew he was a big reader. The idea with the musician interviews was not so much to ask them about their bands or music, but I wanted to ask them about books they liked, music they liked, not, you know, their own music, and what they did for work, you know. Everybody I interviewed was from DC with one exception, and that person moved to DC 40 years ago. So I would ask them questions about Chevy Chase DC, what memories they had of it. So that's, that seemed like an easy way to beef up the number of pages right off the bat. And then, like I said, I kept asking, people kept saying yes, which was kind of amazing to me. So then, my aspirations grew, and we added a lifestyle column. We had a celebrity encounters section. we had people would write. It was during the pandemic, so there were no concerts. So people would write reviews of concerts they had attended at some point in their life. So my friend Laura Scalzo wrote about going to a secret Jaco Pastorius gig at the Lone Star Cafe in New York City right before Christmas in 1984 or 85, I think. The gig started at 2 o'clock in the morning. I mean, it's sort of, I've got this theory that everybody has at least one great story in them. I mean, some people have tons of them, but the goal here was like, if somebody had told me a great story at any point in their life, or at any point in my life, I would sort of double back and try and get them to write it down for this. So we've got an article. A guy I used to work with was roommates with JJ Redick at Duke University in the early 2000s. He had an amazing story of a behind the scenes look at why Duke lost to an unranked UNC team on national television. So I got him to write that down. My friend John Boree was Junior Wells, the Chicago Blues man's last guitar player. He told me an amazing story about when they played Bruce Willis and Demi Moore's Blues Club in Idaho. And so 20 years later, I made him write it down and put it in my newsletter. So it was kind of, there was no grand plan, but it was just so much fun. And as you guys know, we were so bored and had so much time to spare during the pandemic that it just spiraled. And I think the last issue, first issue was 2 pages, the last issue was like 30 pages.
Wow.
So it was something. It was really fun.
Looking back at it now, what did you take from that experience? What would you say is sort of I don't know, is there sort of a grand like theme to all of this as it's all collected in one place?
That's a great question. It's funny, I've had to read this thing so many times in sort of getting it ready for publication. And each time I read it, I did not write most of it. And so I feel like I can be more objective about it than I would be if it were something where I'd written the whole thing. I'm just impressed by the generosity of my friends and family who wrote these pieces for me. I'm impressed by how well written they are, how smart and how funny people are, and just the sense of, I'm reminded of like the sense of community in my neighborhood during the pandemic. I mean, it was great. Obviously, the pandemic was terrible. COVID was terrible. So many people died. But the quarantine part sort of forced people, I think, to interact in ways that they didn't really have time for before. And so looking back at this now, I'm like, wow, like this is a really cool sort of document of what was going on in my neighborhood at the time.
Yeah, that's it. I think that's it. That's really well said. What did you learn about publishing, being on the other side?
I loved it. As I've told people before, look, it was a self-published newsletter with a circulation of less than 100, I am pretty sure. But I felt like I was Tina Brown running the New Yorker in the 90s, and I was doing like really, really cutting edge stuff and pushing boundaries. But what I loved is like, that Roger Rogerson bio, the first thing I did, I wrote by accident. It was supposed to be a magazine article. And then I really struggled with, I kept trying to write a book after that. And like when I was actually trying to, it was hard because I totally overthought it. And I would get overwhelmed. But with this, it's just some dumb newsletter that I wasn't even sure that people were reading. And so, like, literally any idea I had, I'd be like, sure, let's go for it. There's like, you know, there's like a, I would write fake letters to myself and then answer them. You know, the one time we opened for Glenn Matlock at Jam and Java in 2013, and I asked him, you know, I asked him the age old question, could Sid Vicious actually play bass? And he answered the question, and I, you know, it occurred to me, I was like, wow, I should write that down so that, you know, the 25 people that read my newsletter will know the truth. So I did that. It was, I mean, it was great. Any idea I had, I could just throw it in there and throw it out in the world. I loved it.
That's the beauty of a fanzine, too. You know, I love that concept of, well, we need a letters to the editor section. We don't have anyone that's going to write one, so let's write them ourselves, and maybe someone else will actually join in later and actually absolutely write one, too.
Yeah. Patrick, remind me, who was it? You wrote a bad review of, it was a bad review of a Shudder to Think record in your zine, and then you ran into them at the show.
I did. That was my first experience of what criticism can actually do. Yeah. I wasn't publishing in a vacuum yet. I was stammering quite a bit at that moment.
Yeah. But yeah, like, you know, when you finally meet somebody and you realize that somebody that you don't know is actually reading something that you wrote, it's like, my God, I can't believe this is happening.
I know. It's incredible. It really is. And I love the way this is all collected and put together, Hunter, but I do have to ask you, and I don't mean to put you on the spot here, but I think a lot of the credit in this book probably goes to Hugo, and I'm glad to see that there's a lot of photographs of Hugo in this book. Can you talk about his role in putting the newsletter together?
Yeah, so Patrick is referring to my dog, Hugo, who you guys met when you
we
the
did.
First... The first time, I guess it was Hardcore Week, you came to my house, my old house, which is where the library was, and Hugo was hanging out with us. So Hugo was the only dog the first and only dog we ever had. Sadly, Hugo passed on about a year and a half ago. But he was a golden doodle, and he was, I called him the deputy proprietor, which he kind of was, because he would get up early. I would type these things up early on Saturday mornings. Hugo would lie on my feet, and then we'd go out and put the stuff in the box, walk around the neighborhood, go check the box. He really was, he played an integral role in the newsletter. So I thought it made a lot of sense to put as many photos of him as I could in the book. So we've got, Hugo had a purple mohawk for a while. My daughter got really into watching this reality TV show called The Pack, which is like The Amazing Race, but for dogs. And there was a golden doodle on there with a mohawk. So, nice. Hugo got one too. Yeah, he and it's funny you mentioned that. I was before talking to you guys this morning, I was brushing up on it and I was flipping through and I was like, just seeing all those photos of Hugo made me smile.
Yeah, it makes me happy too. It really does. It's a great touch.
I will say, as bad as the pandemic was, obviously, overall, it was great for our dog. He loved having everybody at home all the time.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, the thing that occurred to me also, like, you guys experienced it too. I mean, you got the hootenannies going, right? And I feel like, I mean, you know far better than I do, and you always had a great community going, but I feel like during the pandemic is when it really sort of went to another level. And now, you know, you're doing the various fests in the town. So I feel like, again, it was a terrible, terrible time in the country's history, but good stuff came out of it.
Yeah. One thing I think, looking back at this all collected, that makes it really fascinating and I think worthwhile for people to buy this and read it is it it really is like an incredible recommendation engine for all these books that are out there. Right. There's a fascinating book that's mentioned among many books that are mentioned. Ivor Hansen, who was a fixture on the DC scene and in many bands, wrote a book called Life on the Ledge that I happen to have just from being a DC punk follower. And it's, yes, there's a lot of stuff about his punk career in there, but also he was a window washer on high rises in New York City, and that's pretty fascinating too. It's so many cool books that are in here that even if you are a music book fan and collector, you might not have come across. And I guess, Hunter, it started with you having overflowing shelves, and you thought, well, I'll never read this book again, so I'm going to give it to somebody else. But man, there's so many gems that come across in this collection.
Yeah. We, at my old house, my wife had very graciously put in these built-in bookshelves to house my book collection. figuring that would solve the problem forever. I'd say about 5 years in, I started stacking books on top of the books that were on the shelves. And then about 8 years in, I was stacking books on top of those. So yeah, this did. And my wife said, she's like, you can't. She's like, I'm not telling you can't buy any more books. I'm just saying that, like, you need to get rid of some books to make room for the new books that you're buying. So this was an effort to do that. Though I confess, I didn't do the greatest job in giving away books, because they're the number of books or the amount of books where I was like, these are books that I love so much I couldn't possibly give them away is still still very large. And lately, though, I've come to the realization that, like, all of our prized collections, the second we die, will become more of dad's crap that we need to figure out how to get rid of. So I really don't want to burden my children with this. So I'm gonna redouble my efforts to get rid of books.
Yes. I'm always like, someday, kids, all of this will be yours.
Oh, God. Like,
thanks. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. Did the newsletter become to you, did it eclipse sort of your excitement about the little library, or did that Absolutely. Become sort of more important to you than just people taking the books?
It became more important to me, Jim, the second that I completed typing up the 2-page thing. it's fun to fire your thoughts out into the world and see what comes back at you.
And what about the idea of putting ink to paper? Was that a different experience? Was that important to you as opposed to just having, something online?
Yeah. I'm like that on all things. Like at work, I always print out hard copies of things, in part because I'm not as good at like proofreading or doing anything if I'm reading it purely on a computer screen. So yeah, it was important to me that there be hard copies, but I should also mention, what I would do is I would put the hard copies in the box. Then I would post JPEGs or JPGs or however
right.
you print JPEGs, the little photo things. I'd post those on my Facebook page, in the Discord Records Facebook group page. And also, my neighborhood has this Facebook page, Chevy Chase Chatter. So I would post it in there, too, to pick up the people that I didn't know, or, sort of random people who didn't know anything about punk. And I would also, I had a mailing list that at the very beginning was small. It was just the people that had contributed. Then, after like the December issue, I was like, I need to boost readership. So I went through all my contacts and I emailed it to everybody I knew that wouldn't get mad at me if I sent it to them. So that really boosted the circulation. And also I got like cool emails back from people that I hadn't talked to in years.
So I was going to ask about this. You mentioned in the book that you got some sort of famous admirers of this work.
Yeah. What was crazy was like, so Kim Thompson, who played in the Delta 72 and a bunch of other really good punk bands, she grew up in the Chevy Chase neighborhood, a couple blocks over from where I lived. And so I emailed her some questions. She was the first person I interviewed that I didn't know at all. And she wrote back these amazing, thoughtful responses. And a couple of my questions were kind of lame. So she just made up her own questions and answered those instead of the lame ones. So it was amazing. Like, she's got stories about Mayor Barry speaking at the Wilson graduation in 1988. She suggested the mayor might have been intoxicated at the time, which would be on brand for Mayor Barry. But so she posted her interview on Instagram. And like Toby Vail from Bikini Kill responded like, this is great. What is this from? And so that sort of like got it started. And then like one April, I woke up and I logged on. And I saw that there was a Nevada Avenue Outdoor Free Bookshop Facebook page. It's a business page because, of course, we were a bookshop. And we had gotten a 5-star review, and it was from Brendan Canny from Fugazi, who I didn't know at all at the time. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. And then my friend Dave Harrison, who's one of the people that I emailed the newsletter to, he was like, this is great. Can I send him my roommate from college? And I'm like, sure, knock yourself out. His roommate's the guy that co-created Game of Thrones. So like, oh, he was God. On our mailing list. So it was and you know, he wrote a letter that I reprinted in the letters section to the newsletter. So it was crazy. And then, you know, I subsequently found out like Ian MacKay was a customer of the bookshop. In fact, I met him at an event a couple of weeks ago or a couple of months ago now, and he had me sign his copy. And I was like, this is amazing. So I was like, what do you write in an inscription to Ian MacKay? So I finally wrote it on, Dear Ian, stay punk, J. Hunter Bennett.
That's fantastic.
Very nice.
I also love, Hunter, the fact that there are footnotes in this. To me, footnotes are always a mark of quality, from David Foster Wallace to Lester Bangs. All the great authors have used footnotes. What was the motivation behind doing that? Because I think they're wonderful.
That is 100% my sister, sister Bradley, who coincidentally went to Amherst with David Foster Wallace.
No way.
They had an English class together, and he never said anything. So my sister asked a mutual friend, she's like, did I ever have any classes with him? And he's like, yeah, he was in our class there. So anyway, my sister in issue 2 wrote an essay about a book she loved called Pobby and Dignan. I think that's what it was called, or mm-hmm. Pobby and Dingan. I can't remember. But anyway, she put footnotes in there, and I was like, wait a minute. This communique can have footnotes. And so it was on.
I love it.
It's fantastic. All right. So where can people get the book More Punk Than the Public Library?
Well, if you have an independent bookstore or a cool bookstore in your town, they will likely stock it. Microcosm Publishing, my publisher, does a really good job of getting their books into indie bookstores. Like, for instance, if you live in DC, you can get a copy of Politics and Prose. You can get it at Art Sound Language Record Store. You could also get it at Mojo Mala Record Store in Silver Spring. If you do not have a bookstore in your town, or the bookstore doesn't carry it, best way to get it is order it directly from Microcosm. They will send you a bunch of free stuff with it, and you will get it very quickly. The problem with ordering it from Amazon, it's available to be ordered from Amazon, but Microcosm doesn't sell directly to Amazon. So like, it might take a long time for your book to arrive. And also, like, all things considered, why not support a small publisher or a small bookstore rather than ordering from Amazon?
Right, exactly. Okay.
Absolutely.
And where can people get Dot Dash Music?
Dot Dash Music is available from Amazon. It's you can also go to our Bandcamp page and you can order stuff. You can we have a greatest hits LP called 16 Again, which is an actual record. The rest of our stuff is on CD. I have exciting and breaking Dot Dash news, some of which I shared with Patrick. We have two gigs coming up. We're playing with Pansy Division at Comet Ping Pong in September. We are playing with the Young Fresh Fellows at Hank Deedle's in October. And this is the scoop. So we recorded our eighth record in New York City at Renegade Studios, which is the studio that little Steven Van Zandt owns. We recorded that Memorial Day of 2025. And so it's been in the can for a while, as they say in the biz. But the record has now been mixed. It was sent off for mastering yesterday, which I imagine means that it should be out in the early fall. Possibly in time for that Young Fresh Fellows show, though. Who knows?
And definitely in That's time for exciting. The holiday gift giving season.
Definitely.
That's right.
And you know, it's I know it's a phrase that's used so often. It's basically like a cliche, but why not give the gift of Dot Dash this holiday?
There you go. Exactly. Exactly. And then include the book too. Get the book as well.
Yeah. And I will note for our listeners in the metro, DC metro area that, Hunter, I believe you said the Young Fresh Fellows Dot Dash show at Hank Deedle's starts at 6 p.m.
It does, 6 p.m. on a Sunday night. So you know what?
That's if perfect for our crowd.
Yeah, you will be home. You will be back. You could be in bed by 9:30.
Wow.
Depending
That's
on what
incentive.
You Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Hunter. This has been
Thanks,
great.
Hunter.
Everybody, again, the name of the book is More Punk Than the Public Library. And Patrick, we need to get with Hunter again on another week. We need to do another week.
Yes.
Theme week.
We definitely do.
If you have any ideas on that, Hunter, let us know and we'll come over and we'll record.
Yeah. Well, I still would love to do it. I'm not sure it lasts a whole week because I'm not sure they even have five albums. But, you know, I think we do need to go deep cuts on the Oranges Band at some Ooh. Point.
Oh, that would be fantastic. Okay. Absolutely.
This has been great. Thanks very much, Hunter.
Thanks so much for Thanks, having Hunter. Me.
It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And we'll talk to you all later.
John Stab, my former bandmate and friend, worked at Glen Echo Hardware for years, which is this like little indie hardware store in Glen Echo, which is just outside DC. And I was talking to John one time, and he's like, "Yeah, I got in trouble at work because I was on the phone with Barry from the Necros for 45 minutes. Oh, wow. I was supposed to be checking people out. And I'm like, what did you talk about with Barry from the Necros for 45 minutes? He's like, I don't know, man. We were just catching up. So next That's time you're hilarious. In a store and you're getting kind of frustrated because you just want to buy your stuff and the clerk is on the telephone and you're like, I really wish they would get off. Like, you know, think twice before you say anything because it could be Barry from the Necros on the other end of that line.